time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning, Bruce Gagnon. Bruce Gagnon has been working on space issues for more than 27 years and is co-founder and coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. He is a Vietnam-era veteran and began his career working for the United Farm Workers Union in Florida, organizing fruit pickers. For 15 years, he coordinated the Florida Coalition for Peace and Justice and organized the largest peace protest in Florida history when over 5,000 people marched on Cape Canaveral in opposition to the first flight test of the Trident II nuclear missile. And he will be speaking here in the greater Seattle area at several events, and we'll be giving you details on that at the end of the half hour. Bruce, thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you.
So start out, tell us about the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space.
Well, actually, it's our 20th year in operation. We were created in 1992 because at that time I was working for the Florida Coalition for Peace and Justice, and obviously with the NASA and the Kennedy Space Center there in Florida, we were witnessing the arms race moving into space in a dramatic way. And our friends in Colorado Springs, Colorado, a group called Citizens for Peace in Space, where the Air Force Space Command headquarters is, we were the only two groups in the country that were consistently working on this issue and put our heads together and said, you know, this thing, we really need to get it out to a larger audience, because all over the world, the Space Command was creating bases to talk to the satellites. As the satellites would orbit the Earth, they feed their signal to the ground just below them. And so groups, peace groups in England and Australia and other countries were saying, hey, we don't want our country to be used for these Space Command bases that are helping to put in motion this whole Star Wars infrastructure. So they became the membership of the global network. And so today, 150 affiliated groups around the planet working hard to try to head off this insane process of directing all warfare from space technology. They call it net-centric warfare and full-spectrum dominance, that the U.S. military will dominate conflict at every level directed by U.S. military satellites. So when we launched Shock and Awe Invasion of Iraq in 2003 against Saddam Hussein, in the initial attack, 70% of the weapons were directed to their targets by military satellites. And today, the drones flying over Afghanistan and Pakistan are basically flown by pilots, as they call them, sitting back at bases in the United States, places like Creech Air Force Base outside of Las Vegas, hooked up to computer screens, joysticks, flying these things in real time, split-second time, connected by satellites to the drone flying over Afghanistan and Pakistan with their Hellfire missiles on board. And the guy sitting there and looking at the screens, is it Taliban? Is it Al-Qaeda? Is it a wedding? Is it a funeral? And they can push this button, and again, real time, split-second, the signal flies through space, through the satellite, to the drone. Boom. They fire the missile. They kill some more civilians. So all of this is happening now today with your tax dollars. And the Pentagon is saying, well, you know, if we could do that, so could someone else, right? So we can't allow any other country to have access to space. And in fact, they wear a patch on their uniform at the Space Command that says Master of Space. So we're out there working hard at it. The Pentagon brags that this will be the largest industrial project in the history of the planet Earth. So much money that they say they have to come up with a dedicated funding source to pay for it, and they have. They say that it's the entitlement programs that officially are Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and what's left of the welfare program. And that's why we see both parties today, Republicans and Democrats, going after these programs under the excuse of, you know, austerity. We have, you know, growing budget deficit. We have to cut these programs. We have to raise the retirement age for Social Security. We have to cut into health care programs and Medicare and Medicaid. We have to decrease the amount of the money that people get on food stamps every month. but really it's all about moving, transferring the money over into the military-industrial complex that is just eating our country alive.
Can you talk a bit about the beginnings of the U.S. space program? Because I don't think many people listening are aware of our ties to, let's say, Project Paperclip.
Yeah, at the end of World War II, the United States smuggled into this country 1,500 of the top Nazi operatives. The Nazi rocket team that was launching the V-1 and V-2 rockets against the European cities towards the end of the war when Hitler was getting desperate. They were running an operation inside of a mountain chain in Germany where they had slave labor, Jews, gypsies, French resistance fighters, communists. They had 40,000 slaves there inside this mountain tunnel where they were building these rockets for Hitler. They killed 25,000 of them there in these concentration camps, slave labor. And so after the war, we brought in 100 of the top Nazi rocket scientists, including Werner von Braun and also Major General Walter Dornberger. He was Hitler's liaison in charge of the whole program. He was Werner von Braun's boss. They were brought to the U.S. along with 100 copies of the V-2 rocket to create the U.S. space program. Walter Dornberger became vice president of Bell Aerospace in New York. And in fact, in 1953, he testified before the Congress of the United States saying, "Gentlemen, I didn't come to this country to lose the Third World War. I lost two already." And he talked about the need to have orbiting battle stations in space so that we could control not only the Earth below, but who could get on and off the planet Earth. You know, just in the last week, there's been a story about going out to mine the asteroids. Google and a lot of these other corporate executives putting money into these technologies. Well, they've been planning for a long time at the Space Command that they'll have a role in all this. Their job will be to control the pathway on and off the planet Earth, like the front gate of a military base, to determine who gets to go mine the sky and who doesn't. So anyway, that's all the Nazi prophecies. But in addition to the rocket scientists, the Nazi intelligence were brought into the country under Operation Paperclip. They were used to help create the CIA. The former Nazi scientists that were doing mind control experiments on the Jews, they were brought in to do the MK Ultra LSD drug experiments of the 60s when people were jumping out of windows because they were having bad trips. Those were the Nazi scientists. The Nazi scientists that were doing experiments on putting Jews in freezing temperatures to see how the body would react. They were brought to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio to create the U.S. Air Force Flight Medicine Program. And so the entire military-industrial complex was seeded with these 1,500 top Nazi operatives. And so the question becomes, is there a ideological contamination when you infuse the military-industrial complex with these top Nazi operatives? And I believe there indeed was, and it's pretty much hard to deny that there was. So it's a story that not many people know about. There's a book written about it all that's fascinating. Former CNN reporter Linda Hunt wrote a book called Secret Agenda, and I highly recommend it to people.
All right, so talk more about the U.S. space program. Between then and now, critical developments you see that occurred during that time?
Well, so that, you know, they began working on this military space stuff right after World War II. Always NASA was controlled by the Pentagon. Always. Every mission was what they call dual use, meaning it was civilian and military at the same time. And it's still that way today. Just to give an example, about 2 years ago, NASA fired a missile from an orbiting space satellite into the moon. It went deep in under the ground, like a bunker buster kind of thing. And they said they were looking for water, you know, trying to find water on the moon. Okay, fine. But what's the military application of this particular test? Well, turn the satellite around, aim the missile at the Earth, and you have developed a technology that can be fired at Russia or China, for example, that can, from space, penetrate underground and try to take out their, let's say, their underground nuclear weapons. As it turns out, the U.S. Space Command for the last several years has been wargaming a first strike attack on China set in the year 2016. They call it the Red Team versus the Blue Team. And in this first strike attack, China has 20 nuclear missiles capable of hitting the west coast of the United States. So in this first strike attack, the U.S. launches this attack on China, trying to take out their 20 nuclear missiles that are underground in these underground bunkers. And so systems like this one that was tested on this otherwise innocuous NASA, you know, space mission, civilian application, you know, you see how this game begins to work. So the military has been riding the NASA horse for a long, long, long time. That's the way the public doesn't get too alarmed. You know, if you can shelter it and pretty it up, dress it up as a civilian thing, then the public doesn't pay much attention. But now the successor to the shuttle, you know, the shuttle's being retired. The successor is going to be called the military space plane. It would have a role in this first strike attack on China. It would fly down from orbit, drop an attack also. So many different technologies being worked on as the U.S. today begins to surround Russia and China. We're now encircling both those countries. Why would we encircle Russia? With NATO expansion, with U.S. so-called missile defense systems surrounding Russia, why would we do that? Why do we want to restart the Cold War with Russia? Well, as it turns out, Russia has the world's largest supply of natural gas and significant supplies of oil. And don't we know by now that the primary job of the Pentagon is to serve as the resource extraction service of corporate globalization? One recent example of that was the invasion of Libya by the U.S. and NATO. Well, didn't we invade Libya to free the people from Gaddafi and get rid of Gaddafi? Isn't that why we invaded Libya? Well, no. As it turns out, Libya has the largest supply of oil on the African continent. And so, again, the Pentagon's primary role is to serve as resource extraction service under corporate globalization. The Pentagon's been saying for a few years now that under corporate globalization, every country is going to have a different role. And they say, we're not going to make things in America anymore. We're not going to make clothes and shoes and refrigerators and television sets. It's cheaper to go overseas, maximize profits internationally. Our role in America under corporate globalization, they say, will be security export. So we'll be the military arm of corporate globalization. So we'll send our young people to die consistently over and over again in endless wars to control the declining resources around the world. We're running out of oil. We're running out of natural gas. We're running out of water. The minerals under the ground that are used to make computers, laptops, and cell phones, primarily under the African soil. So that's why we've created the Africa Command, AFRICOM, in recent years to begin to establish control of the African continent. So this is our role in the U.S. in the coming period. And in order to pay for all that, again, they have to destroy social progress. That's why they're privatizing public education. That's why they're making it difficult for young people to go to college anymore. So when I was in Santa Monica, I'm on this 30-day speaking tour coming up from San Diego all the way here now, 24 cities. And when I was in Santa Monica, California, students at Santa Monica Community College were protesting against a 300% increase in tuition. And they were pepper sprayed. This was just a couple weeks ago. 100 of them pepper sprayed, several taken to the hospital because it was so serious. So the oligarchy that runs this country, the corporate oligarchy that is drowning our democracy today, understands that they have to take us down. They have to take us to back to feudalism, neo-feudalism, I call it, in order to extract our resources, our fiscal resources, to pay for all of this endless war to benefit these multinational corporations. So space technology becomes a key element, a key strategic tool in the warfare toolbox to make all this happen.
So where it once was not unheard of to people to hear people criticizing U.S. foreign policy and saying we really can't be the world's policeman anymore, it sounds like you're saying, no, that's exactly what the Pentagon wants us to remain.
And that's our top job in the world, you know. And that's so if you don't have many jobs, that means increasingly for young people, the only option then is to go into the military. I live in Maine. Maine is largely a rural state, and there are no jobs in Maine anymore. The largest employer in the state is General Dynamics Corporation, building weapons. But outside of that, there's not many jobs. Even the paper mills are closing down. They're cutting timber and taking it out of the country and processing it, again, because there's cheaper labor in other places. So young people are finding that their only future is military. You know, in fact, 2 years ago, Sears came out with a new clothing line for young boys. I heard about it. I went to the store with a friend of mine, and there they were, military camouflage uniforms for young boys. So what's the message to working class kids in America? This is all you're going to be.
Talk about the current situation with the Obama administration. What expansions have they made on this program?
Obama is now encircling Russia and China with these so-called missile defense systems, land-based and sea-based systems surrounding Russia and China. And they're part of this first strike attack program. The idea is that after you launch your first strike attack on Russia or China and they try to fire a retaliatory nuclear strike, you have these so-called missile defense systems that you've pre-positioned around them. You have them take out their remaining retaliatory capabilities. So imagine it after we lunge forward with the sword, the first strike sword, into the heart of Russia or China, they try to launch their remaining nuclear weapons in a retaliatory strike. And then we then have this so-called missile defense shield put up in order to take out their retaliatory capability, giving us then a successful and complete first strike attack. So today, Obama is surrounding Russia and China with these systems, very provocative, very dangerous, going to lead to a new arms race. And at the same time, and Obama has announced a pivot of U.S. foreign and military policy into the Asia Pacific, which means we are today doubling our numbers of bases, our troop levels. Obama just went to Australia. Did you know that Australia was in danger of being invaded and that he cut a deal to send 2,500 Marines to northern city Darwin on the north coast of Australia to defend Australia? Now, who's going to invade Australia? I mean, this is ridiculous. Well, it's not about defense whatsoever. It's about this offensive pivot that is being used to surround China. Now, why do we want to surround China? We thought, you know, we're becoming big trading partners, right? Well, as it turns out, the Pentagon is determined that while we can't compete with China economically anymore, if we control their access to resources, then we'll hold the keys to their economic engine and we'll be in charge. This is the way we stay in charge, by militarily controlling resources around the world. King of the Hill. So, as it turns out, China imports 60% of their oil on ships. And if you look at a map, you'll notice that China, what separates China and Korea is this thing called the Yellow Sea. And this is the route that the Chinese ships carrying their oil and other resources go. So, as it just below the South Korean peninsula, just south of it, is this little island called Jeju Island. Pristine environmental jewel, UNESCO recognized World Heritage Sites, environmental jewel. And so on this little island, the U.S. is forcing the South Korean government to build a Navy base so that we can port our warships to help choke off China's importation of oil. So again, we control their economy this way. Well, this is going to create a new arms race in that region, just as we're going to create a new arms race with Russia as we surround them. We're going to create a new arms race with China as we surround them too. And of course, the military-industrial complex just loves that idea, right? Because they are now, in my state, in Maine, where we build Navy Aegis destroyers, in my town, Bath, Maine, at Bath Iron Works, owned by General Dynamics, the senators and representatives from our state are running around the state saying, oh, my God, look, look, China is now increasing its military. China is now increasing its warships. Well, gee, I wonder why. It's because we're surrounding them, you know. And so we got to build more. So this is how the game works. Now, imagine if China and Russia were building bases in Canada and Mexico and deploying warships off the Atlantic Ocean and the Pacific coast of the U.S. We'd be going ballistic over it, right? We're doing the same to them, and the American people don't even know it.
Talk more about Jeju Island. You actually had been there recently, visited.
I was there in February, actually. On the south side of Jeju Island is this little village, 1,200 people. It's called Kangjeon Village, a 450-year-old fishing and farming community just offshore, beautiful UNESCO recognized endangered soft coral reefs, beautiful, beautiful things, tropical fish. It's a semi-tropical island. And today they're dredging the waterway there to deepen it, the seabed, to make it deeper, to bring in U.S. aircraft carriers, U.S. nuclear submarines, and these Navy Aegis destroyers that are outfitted with these so-called missile defense systems. And then on the rocky coast, the sacred rocky coast they call Gurumbi, where they've worshipped nature for 450 years, worshipped the passing of their relatives. This is today being blasted by the Samsung Corporation. As it turns out, Samsung has a division where they're the construction division. They're the leading contractor to build this base. There's now a boycott been declared on Samsung by the Korean peace community. We urge you to help honor that. And so after they've blasted this rocky coast, they're going to cover it in cement to build the reefs and wharfs to dock these U.S. warships. So the entire way of life of this village is being destroyed today. So we've been very supportive of them, and they asked us to bring our annual meeting there in February. We did. We brought people from 13 countries, and they took us on kayaks out to the rocky coast because you can't get to it anymore by foot because Samsung has closed it off with fences and razor wire and everything else. So they took us out on kayaks, and we crawled, 16 of us crawled under the kayaks and were arrested and under the razor wire, rather, and were arrested and taken to jail. I've never met such a more determined, fierce, nonviolent group of people in all my life as these villagers, you know, because they have their entire way of life at stake here, you know. Everything is on the line for them. And so they're in the streets 12 to 14 hours a day for the last 5 years, nonviolently battling. And I use those two words together because they are nonviolent, but it's a fierce battle being waged with the police trying to block the construction trucks, the cement trucks, trying to get back onto Gurumbi, sacred rock, putting holes in the fence and going through the fence or back out in the kayaks, trying to go under the razor wire. And there's a huge number of Catholic priests and nuns that have come from all over Korea. In South Korea, Catholics are like 40% of the population. It's a big, big part of the religious tradition. And so, but it's really unlike any Catholic church you have ever seen in your life. Catholic priests and nuns come in hordes and get arrested there. They had a big mass of more than 3,000 Catholic priests and nuns last year from all over South Korea. And then they determined that we are going to go home to every diocese in this country and take this issue of Jeju Island to the people. And so people are coming to Jeju from all over the country and from around the world now to support the villagers. But there's this one priest, 71-year-old Father Moon, long flowing white beard. He's the most famous Catholic priest in all of South Korea. And he is fierce. And he twitters all day to his followers around the country. Well, he was recently pushed off this big, huge tetrapod, it's called, this ugly piece of cement that they create to put out in the ocean. He was pushed off it by a policeman, and he fell 20 feet and hit his head and bounced off the cement and ended up breaking 3 vertebrae and his wrist. He was in the hospital for a couple weeks, and he's back out. And yesterday he was arrested crawling under a truck. And there's a picture of him. You can see the cast on his arm from his broken wrist. And he's under one of these construction trucks. At it again. Father Moon going to jail one more time. It's just unbelievable. And he's pledged to die there. And so this is the kind of fierceness that these people are displaying. And, you know, they say, who will speak for the rocks? Who will speak for the fish? Who will speak for the coral? Who will speak for the water that is now being contaminated as they blast the rocky coast and prepare to build this Navy base? And so the people there are really connected to nature. They really understand their human connection to nature. And so this struggle on Jeju Island is so important because it connects really the environment. It connects a human rights issue. It connects the peace issue. So the global community needs to support these folks because it's one place where we can defend human rights and the environment and peace and stop this military confrontation the U.S. is now putting together with China. That, you know, this terrible, terrible confrontation that the U.S. is creating. So it's really important. If you go to Facebook, you can find the page No Navy Base on Jeju, and you follow this whole campaign.
We are talking with Bruce Gagnon. He's co-founder and coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. And unfortunately, we're just about out of time. We didn't have time to get into talking about conversion, but you're going to be doing multiple talks here in the greater Seattle area where you discuss that there is actually some hope for converting over our military-industrial complex to more peaceful means.
Yeah, we need to stop building weapons and build rail systems and a solar society, help deal with our real problem, which is climate change. And empirical evidence shows that if we do that, we'll double and triple the amount of jobs that we presently get from military spending. Military spending is capital intensive, but it is not labor intensive. And if we put money into home weatherization, into solar, into rail systems, into healthcare, into education, in every case we'll create more jobs with our tax dollars. And that's the way we can deal with climate change and resurrect our collapsing economy.
So you are going to be doing 3 talks that I know of here, and starting today, focus the deadly connection, endless war and economic crisis. You're going to be speaking today, Saturday the 28th, at 1 p.m. at Soul Food Books in Redmond. That's at 15748 Redmond Way. Tomorrow, Sunday the 29th, at 4 p.m. at University Temple United Methodist Church, which is at 1415 Northeast 43rd Street. People should be familiar with that church by now. And then Monday, down in Tacoma, you'll be speaking at the University of Washington Tacoma at Carowind Auditorium from 1230 to 1:30 p.m. Does that all sound correct?
And if people go to our website, spaceforpeace.org, spaceforpeace.org, right at the top of the homepage, there's a link to the whole schedule, speaking schedule, if you want more information.
All right. Well, with that, we are unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you very much for coming and spending time with us.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.